I bought one. And I was pondering it using some of my Ignatian, Catholic Ignatian training. And I was visualizing. And you try to visualize from every point of view you can possibly think of. And even to the point like if you're in a seaside parable, you're supposed to even try to smell the sea. You really try to get into the scene from every viewpoint possible. And I eventually started thinking about this cross and the associated Bible passages from the scene of the sheep that's being carried. And something hit me. You know, just 1 hour before this scene, that sheep was lost, was truly lost. He didn't know when he woke up this, that morning that, oh yeah, today's the day Jesus is going to be carrying me back into the fold. You know, no, this sheep was truly lost. And the beautiful thing is, this lost sheep, when Jesus found the lost sheep, wasn't told to repent, change his evil ways. He wasn't told go to confession or go through some initiation program, say some creed or confession. Wasn't told, oh, you can come back to the fold provisionally, but you just stay in the back and keep quiet, and then we'll see how you're doing. No, that's not the way Jesus works. Jesus, I imagine Jesus said, there you are, I've been looking for you. It's great to see you. Welcome. You look tired. Let me carry you. And carrying back through the flock, Jesus, I'm sure, exclaimed, look who came back. Come, say hello. It's that kind of concern, that care, that compassion that you just can't fake. And that's why it feels so good. And it can be just that simple and easy for all of us. The Bible is full of lost people who find their answer in God. And one of the most famous, and probably we don't think of him in these terms, is Paul, the Apostle Paul, the most prolific writer in the New Testament. And he addresses his troubles in his letter to the Romans. Now, this letter to the Romans is different than all the other letters of Paul. Typically, Paul's writings, he wrote to individual churches, the Corinthians, the Ephesians. And these are churches that he started himself. Typically, Paul would go to a city, he'd live there a couple years, support himself in various jobs. I think tent making was a big one. And he would preach and talk to the people and eventually would establish a church. After the church was going strong, he'd move on to another community where he would do the same thing. Now, friends would visit him and report back on the progress of these churches he started, and they were frequently having troubles, and so he would write him a letter, and these are the letters that we find in the New Testament. Now, this will cause a lot of problems for those who insist on reading every word of the Bible as God's literal and unchangeable word. The point of these letters, they were addressing specific situations, but not the letter to the Romans. Paul had never been to Rome. So when he wrote his letter to the Roman church, he didn't start that church. He wasn't addressing any particular problem or particular congregation. He writes very broadly about the Christian faith, and that's why it's considered such an important letter. And I want to read you a paragraph from his text of the letter to the Romans. Now, I like to call this passage Paul's multiple personalities. I'll read some of this passage and listen closely. Listen closely to all the Pauls that you hear in this. There seems to me to be at least three. A good Paul, a bad Paul, and a third Paul who's observing the other two with great confusion. And this is from the 7th chapter of the book of Romans, where Paul says, I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Now if I do what I do not want, I agree that the law is good, but in fact it is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. For I know that nothing good dwells within me, that is, in my flesh. I can will what is right, but I cannot do it. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. Now, if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do what is good, evil lies close at hand. For I delight in the law of God in my inmost self, but in my members I see another law at war with the law in my mind, making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man am I! Who will rescue me from this body of death? That's one confused guy. Truly a man at wit's end. Now, I don't think most people realize what a tortured soul Paul was. You know, he looks deep inside himself and he sees this good Paul and bad Paul doing battle in the depths of his psyche. Now, the modern doctor of psychology might do a similar thing. He can recognize the dark side within some people, and a dark side that can be almost unbearable. But the modern psychologist and Paul have a different way of, different solution to these problems. For the doctor of psychology, the answer is to accept and integrate one's dark side into your life, to stop hiding from it, to recognize, look for the reasons that led you to make these choices, become a whole person by accepting all these aspects of your being. But for Paul, as we can find elsewhere in his writings, his solution is for the bad Paul to die, that Jesus might live through him. There is no compromise. There's no integration of the good and the bad Paul. Paul says we must die to ourselves so that Jesus may live through us. Now, of course, much easier said than done. And Paul remained a tortured soul most of his life. But he did ultimately come to the conclusion that in spite of this evil twin that lived inside him that he could never quite shake, still he believed that God loved and forgave him. And further, Paul came to understand that there was nothing he could do to be good enough for God. He could not possibly earn God's love. It was a free gift. And that sounds a little bit like the modern psychologist's prescription of finding peace by accepting oneself. The reason I find this passage of Paul very, very capturing is that I too find life totally irrational at times. You know, we human beings are very fragile creatures. We like to stand tall and walk through life as though we've got it all together. We have all the answers. But the truth is, we're clueless. We're in the middle of a mystery that we don't understand, and we don't really want to give it a whole lot of thought. It's much easier just to stay busy, keep moving, keep calm, and walk tall. We don't want to take a lot of time for self-reflection, because we don't want to end up like Paul, wondering why we sometimes know what's right but do what's wrong, looking at our actions as though some sort of third party doing these things. It's much easier to switch on the TV and keep your mind on the more mundane matters. If we think too hard and too long about our own life, we might just end up like Paul. But every now and again, life does just slap us in the face. I think we're all just one or two life events from coming completely apart at the seams. And when life turns us upside down, we'd better have some sort of powerful anchor to keep us moored to. That's what Paul's looking for in this passage from Romans. He's looking for his spiritual anchor. As his world spins out of control and desperation, he's looking for this foundation where he can take a stand. And it's the Bible passage today from Matthew that I think is the real key to solving these problems. This passage can untie all the knots that we tend to create in our mind. Listen to the words of Jesus, like Marie read. Come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens. I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I think that's a great passage. There's no problem in our lives that can't be solved with just a single word: relax. All we need to do is surrender, to take his yoke upon ourselves. And you know, I think it could be even easier than that. While I was visualizing, I thought about the yoke. You know, maybe at times I am the yoke, at least God's yoke. You know, if you look up yoke, it's a harness to tie two draft animals together so they work together as they pull a load. But when we've made such a mess of our lives that we're not even capable of carrying ourselves, at least from God's point of view, we may well be the yoke. Maybe when we can't even take one more piece of straw, that's when we need help. God will take the yoke of us, the burden of us, upon his shoulders. Jesus says, take my yoke and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Rest for your souls, just as if you're being carried on the shoulders of God. Just rest. Relax. If we can do that, I think we can solve all of our personal problems. Ego and awareness cannot exist in the same time and space. Ego and awareness cannot exist in the same time and space. Think about it. They both start from different points in the mind. Many great spiritual masters tell us just to be aware of the here and now, that nothing else is required. An enjoyment, a deep contentment will arise. As soon as we try to enjoy, the enjoyment ends. Somehow at the bottom of this pure awareness, of this emptiness, of openness, there is enjoyment, a fullness, a presence, and peace. Take and accept yourself just as you are, just where you are. Let God work with your faults and limitations. Just recognize them. Just be with them. Just relax. Don't try and correct them, not directly. They're force and exaggeration. They're going to diminish. Bring your same emptiness and freedom to each moment, and you can be happy even in the midst of suffering. Accept everyone and everything just as they are, just where they are. Try to act as lovingly as possible in every situation. Jesus asks us to yoke ourselves to him, to think as he thinks, to act as he acted. But it's amazing, this one they call the Messiah, the Christ, he didn't spend his days debating complex theological matters. Oh, he was introspective. He spent a great deal of time in prayer. He would love to go off and spend time alone in prayer and meditation. But he didn't stay on top of the mountain. He came down from the mountain. His inner journey that led him to the very love that was calling him into being, the very love that I think holds the universe together, he came down from that mountain. He came down from the mountain and poured out the love that he found deep within himself, poured it out all over this crazy and hurting world that he lived. And he did so joyfully and fearlessly. We too often envision Jesus as some dour, serious martyr, stoically facing the terrible death that was planned for him. But Jesus enjoyed the banquet. He enjoyed gathering with friends around the table, eating and drinking, breaking bread, and finding a joyful abundance in life. He himself often was accused of being a drunk. He was no drunk. But surely he enjoyed the breaking of the bread and the sharing of wine with his friends. So when he says that our burden will be light when we take his yoke upon ourselves, just what is this burden that he's asking us to bear? If we are to be like oxen yoked together, what is this load that we're asked to pull? Isn't it simply the burden of caring? Isn't the load that a Jesus follower must bear simply the pain? The pain that comes from being unable to turn away from the despair of others. And in the grand scheme of things, isn't that an awfully easy burden to bear? Since it is what gives meaning and purpose to our lives. Multiply joy and divide sorrow. I've said it from here before. Multiply joy and divide sorrow. That's the equation for our life. What a great religion. I make no apology. Jesus' religion is a great religion. And the Unitarian Universalist freedom and thought just blossoms in Jesus' teachings. What's a Jesus follower asked to do, really? We're not asked to martyr ourselves. We're not asked to turn away from all of life's joy and immerse ourselves in the misery of the world. We're not asked to turn inward and spend our days in silent contemplation. In fact, Jesus said he came into this world so that we may have life and have it abundantly. Abundant life. Life filled with joy, with laughter, with friends and love. We are challenged to confront the evils of this world, but without losing that joy in our hearts. There is enough food. People should never go hungry. There is enough wealth. People should never have to sleep in the streets. God has given us all the resources we need to take this world of ours we have plenty of everything, with the possible exception of love. We human beings have the brains and the resources and the talent to solve the most pressing problems we face. The only thing we seem to be lacking is love. Enough love to make us willing to use our brains, our resources, our talents in a way that leads to this abundant life for all. And that's where we come in. That's why we're here. None of us can change the world together, by ourselves, but together with the strength and a higher power whose yoke is easy and whose burden is light. Together we can bring a lot of love into this hurting world while our inner conflicts melt away into simple joy. If you have enough genuine care, concern, compassion, and love, looking for lost sheep to welcome, you, like Jorge Bergoglio, or as we know him, Pope Francis,